Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, it's now or never, and I have to basically put it out there. Please start getting your friends, your like-minded patriots, to start understanding that as long as they're possessed by the problem, they will be and will continue to be a part of the problem. I'm trying to connect the dots here, folks. As I say, if you're not engaged in the solution and you're only worried about the problem, how do we get here? What are we doing? And what I'm talking about, you know, the elections do not solve the problem. They will solve one little minor issue. Right now, we actually have to start asserting our authority as the sovereigns over our public servants. This is why we're resorting to the actual tools, in case of emergency, break glass, use the First Amendment petitions, and hold public servants accountable and get rid of them if they refuse to support the Constitution. This is the process that we have to start with to get to Republic Review, to get government back into the framework of the Constitution. So with that, we're going to try to lean forward as fast as we possibly can, as you know, because we do have a lot of things to cover in this comprehensive positions to campaign on for all county, state, and federal elections. So as you know, and I need to get Paul Nally in. We want to start doing some actual interviews with, you know, candidates. I know that Crystal Blessing in Arizona has been trying and pressing and pressing to get. And as a matter of fact, let me give you the guy's name because he's not wanting to come on to the show. But I can understand it if you don't want to be held accountable. Right. If you don't want to be held accountable to the Constitution, but you want to be conservative and just tell people, well, yeah, I'm your conservative guy. And the guy's name is Blake Masters. And so he's got a campaign going. I think he's probably running on conservative values and not on the Constitution. And folks, this is why we actually have to get it in public. We actually need, when you go to a town hall meeting, you need to be the ones to start bringing up. You do realize that I've got a couple questions that all stem around the oath. Do you realize that this is a legal obligation that you must support the Constitution? Yes. That means that you need to understand the Constitution and what those enumerated powers and your limitations based upon the state and federal Constitution. Do you understand those things? Well, yeah, of course I do. Then you're willing to take a test to verify your knowledge and your ability that you're the best in understanding the Constitution out of all of the people in the field for this position?
Well, I don't need to take no test. We don't have tests. And this is how you do this. And so this is where all of a sudden people will see, wow, look, this guy doesn't want to take a test. How many people up there that do want to take a test? You know what? That will make a night and day difference. And then we actually administer tests to everybody to say, well, we don't care. We want to basically test you, and whoever comes off with the best grade for this test, then, you know, I voter beware. If you vote for somebody that scores really low, then don't expect this person to protect your liberties, and don't expect this person to do their job. And then you also need to point out that in this legal obligation, they do know that they can be removed from office because of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment if they fail to support the Constitution. And are they willing to actually abide by, you know, the Constitution and this constitutional requirement? Folks, if we don't have these adult conversations with these supposed alleged adults that want to actually serve us, then whose fault is it? If you don't have the conversation with your children, this is morally unacceptable for you to be doing these things. These are the things you need to do. And if you're not teaching them and being an example, then you're at fault. This is why when it comes down to when I see these mothers mourning over their children that get shot by police because of their behavior, because of their repugnant behavior of actually going out and violating laws, being thugs, I'm sorry, Michael Brown, I don't know what he was thinking. Maybe he was just, I don't know. But to go out there and after going through all of the facts and actually get out there and blame anybody but yourself as the parent and saying, I should have held my son to a higher standard. I should have taught him better. He should have been in choir practice instead of being out in the street, being a juvenile delinquent or being an adult delinquent or an adolescent delinquent, whatever age group, demographic you want to put him into. But bottom line, we all have a responsibility to be civil citizens. Everybody deserves the basics of dignity and respect from each other. And when we're not respecting and giving each other dignity, then what do you expect? And that has to start in the home. The fundamental place. And see, the secular godless people out there think, oh, well, we'll take care of it in the schools. Look at how well they're doing in taking care of it in the schools. They've created such an immoral place that school shootings and all of this terrible behavior. I mean, homelessness, all sorts of immersions into addictive behavior, whether that be gaming, whether that be pornography, whether that be just sex, whether that be drugs, it doesn't matter. This is all destructive behavior. Folks, we've got to step it up. We need to actually start holding ourselves accountable. And we need to get out there and hold our public servants accountable. So as you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org. And thank you for pointing out I didn't say that yesterday in my last episode. And you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic and academic evidence-based solutions of how we got here, where we're going, and what we need to do. Wyoming Conservative Chronicle is a paper for you if you are looking at helping get your county and state back on track. It all starts with, putting print to paper and actually getting out there and trying to do what the other journalist rags are not doing. Now, when it comes down to the private endorsements, I can't say enough about Keith Broders and his constitutionaleducation.us. I've had a few people come back and go, he's got very topic-based and so forth. He doesn't necessarily have, 101 curriculum and so forth. I absolutely agree. But it's about just getting ideas because, bottom line, the only way somebody's going to realize that they need to get a thorough education on the Constitution is by giving them these little snidbits and little things, did you know, types of things. Because that's how they all of a sudden say, we need to bring a 101 course. Now, do not. I know there's lots of conservative entertainers out there that tell you to go to Hillsdale College for, constitutional classes. Don't waste your time. Do not waste your time. If you want a course on the Constitution and going through the Constitution, just download my podcast last year that started on September 17th. And I read through the Constitution. I go through how it's been violated, what each of these things mean. I do a better job in helping you understand what that Constitution really means in Hillsdale College. Hillsdale College isn't there to really teach you the terms and definitions provided by the framers. They're giving you the annotated Constitution understanding, and they're embracing the annotated Constitution. Anyway, in addition to constitutionaleducation.us, we would also invite you to check out Stan Kluwitz, RadioDustCovers.com to protect your products, protect your expensive equipment, because it's worth protecting, folks, just like your liberty. You've worked hard for that. Our forefathers worked hard for our liberty. We need to protect both our liberty and those, investments that we've made in our ham radios, whatever these things are. We need to value those things, and the best way to do that is by protecting them and taking an active position in doing so. Now, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. I did mention earlier that we're going to start doing a weekly or a bi-monthly, in other words, twice every other week or something like that. We're going to just start doing a dial-in, because I know there are people out there that want to start getting involved in doing things. I've had plenty of emails from people to say, what do I do? I live in this particular Yuba City or whatever in California or wherever in Missouri or what have you. We will actually start having these calls so that you can get, and we'll help walk you through where to go on the Take Action page to download, you know, the diagram of what you need to do and how to set up the structure in your county, how to get involved in monetizing this radio show so that you can actually start leading and becoming a constitutional warrior and actually a leader and become a radio show host in your local area through monetizing this radio show, because we're not looking for the profits for us. We need to turn these profits back over to you. We're looking to fund you. And I can't make that any clearer. We're looking to actually support you. There's no other organization that does this. Not even, you know, the John Birch Society comes down to giving you their money. Nobody does that. And so I will just say this, that I believe that this is the godly thing to do, that we actually have to give you the help you need, and part of that help is money. You need the resources for venues, you need the resources for the domain presence. These types of things cost money, and we understand self-sacrifice, and your time is good enough. We'll be on this when we come right back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Before I ran out of time, I understand, and we understand, I can slow down a little bit because I didn't want to bleed into, like I did, into the promos, but we understand that it takes money. We understand, and we appreciate everybody with their self-sacrifice and their time and all of that. But if we want to have the success that we need as fast as we need it, we absolutely need to start creating a vehicle to help fund this. And the only vehicle, and the vehicle I see able to do this, where, you know, I don't make any money out of this. I'm not trying to make any profits. All I need to do is pay off some of my debt. But that's all. I'm not looking to make any profits. And it's going to cost money to grow equipment-wise and some other things that we'll need to do to support this. But, I mean, it's going to be – that's just a small, you know, it's a small fraction here. What we want to do, and we're going to maintain this, you know, this funneling of money into your county and into your state, because as our revenues grow, what we do in paying out to each of these different state organizations that you're going to create, we're going to actually be driving the operations for that, where you don't have to pay for it. And eventually, this will grow into the Reclaiming the Republic network, to where, folks, we're looking at being able to offer more content and even more than just radio to your county and to the good citizens of your state. And as a matter of fact, to the Republic and the whole world will be able to watch and be amazed at the information that they're getting, the analysis that they will be getting. And, you know, we talk about this in my second book, The Strategy to Convene a Convention for Republic Review. Just be clear, that convention word has nothing to do with a constitutional convention. Now, I know, and I already got a little feedback on, you know, my amendment that the states can drive. Look, folks, almost every amendment to the Constitution was driven by the states. Don't think that it has to, the only way states can amend the Constitution is through a constitutional convention. The states can start demanding, and this is why we have the ability for the state legislators. We want to be very clear and concise that we're not telling them to send a petition. If they have an active petition, we need to have them rescind it. And we will get a First Amendment petition in doing just that as well. As a matter of fact, when we go for defenitizing, when we do the petition, let's see where the John Birchers are on this. When we actually draft this First Amendment petition to demand that the state defenitizes the Constitution, the one thing that we need to put into this is that if your state has an active, so we'll have two versions of this. If your state has an active petition to call for a constitutional convention, petitioning Congress for a constitutional convention, then we want you to tell your state legislatures they need to withdraw that. They need to rescind that petition, because what they have to do is they have to definitize and enforce the Constitution. So this will all even include this legislation language that we had out of Wyoming that was authored by Bob Schultz and friends. Not Bob Schultz, by Bob Worf. Anyway, let's get into the issues before we waste any more time. And I'm going to really try to, you know, do a little less editorializing and a lot more focused on content and fact. So the next issue that we're going to cover is the establishment of religion. And in Article 1, you know, I actually started working on this article, by the way, a long time ago, regarding the fact that the federal government had established a godless secular church right under our very noses. But what you need to understand is that the Establishment Clause only applied and still only applies to the federal government. So what I want to do is I'm going to go through each of the states when their church was, you know, formed and when it was disbanded as far as being a formal state-sanctioned church, an established church where the state was paying taxes in supporting the needs of the people, you know, for the compassionate services, those types of things. So the state of Virginia, it had the Anglican Church of England, and it established that church in 1606, and it disbanded it in 1830. Now, let me see. That's a couple of years after the old Constitution was passed and after the Bill of Rights. Did the federal government go after the states because the states had state-sponsored churches? They actually established state-sponsored churches? Absolutely not. Because there was no intent for the states not to have state-sponsored churches. The only reason they went secular is because they wanted to be more open in creating a more enlightened paradigm within the state to allow, not necessarily a conflict, but to allow open dialogue on the truth of Christianity instead of locking things into this is what we believe the truth is. Instead of, you know, forcing a theocratic view, making it more open to all possible theocratic views that embrace liberty. But to be clear, almost all of these states, I don't know which states, I think there were a couple of states that actually allowed, and I think probably Rhode Island, maybe Delaware, maybe Maryland. I think they were really tolerant states. They actually passed tolerance laws in the 1600s towards other Christianities, allowing other Christian faiths to be practiced. I mean, Virginia only allowed the Anglican Church, and it was Madison's remonstrance on religion that actually started bringing to light the fact that, you know, it's wrong to be incarcerating Baptist ministers because they don't have an Anglican license to preach. Are you kidding? So anyway, let me go through this list. The state of New York had the Anglican Church of England, and that was from 1614. Actually, I think this was actually a Dutch colony, so the Anglican Church was actually formed later, but whatever church it was established in 1614 under the Dutch Church and then was converted over to the Anglican Church. So this is interesting because as so fell the colony from Dutch, or as it migrated from Dutch to English, then all of a sudden it also migrated the religious faith as well. And so the New York state gave up its Anglican state-sponsored church in 1846. Massachusetts, the Puritans, this is funny, the Puritans actually gave up on their Puritan faith, and their state-sponsored church was the Congressional Church, and that went from 1629 to 1833. So they gave up on their church as far as the state-sponsored church before New York, but just after Virginia. Anyway, Maryland had the Anglican Church of England, and that was from 1632 to 1867. Delaware was a Christian non-denominational, so they were pretty open for almost their full existence from 1637 to 1792. So this is probably where they didn't actually may have an established church, but they did actually, I think they did, because it was a standard practice that the states, through taxation, used the church to take care of the welfare of the people. They just didn't go there. They just thought that that was wrong for the king to do it. They thought it was wrong for government to do it. So they baked it into their processes to have the state do it. Anyway, Connecticut, the Congressional Church, which was not the Anglican Church, from 1639 to 1818. New Hampshire, the Congressional Church, from 1639 to 1877. So if you see New Hampshire here, you know, that's kind of a big jump, isn't it? And so I believe that what you'll find is New Hampshire was one of the last churches to actually, you know, give up its faith, its association, and its ties from government and church, or this bond between church and state. They were one of the last few states to do this. Now, Rhode Island was another kind of tolerant in open religions. They had the Christian non-denominational, just like Delaware, and it was from 1643 to 1842. Now, South Carolina was another one of these states that actually had a state-sponsored church that they didn't give up until 1868, and it was obviously the Anglican Church of England church, but from 1663 to 1868, that was post-Civil War. That was post-14th Amendment. Same thing with New Hampshire. Now, when the 14th Amendment passed, and it basically stated that no state shall make or create any laws that abridges the privileges and immunities of U.S. citizens, clearly the state-sponsored churches weren't included, because the federal government didn't go after any of these states that still had state-sponsored churches. Now, North Carolina went from 1663 as well to 1875, another late, you know, surrenderer of this tie between church and state. Georgia, and I'm only going through the 13 original. If you want to actually go through all of the newer states, because I'm going to tell you right now, Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio, most of these early form states, they did the same thing. They actually had established state-sponsored churches because they needed compassionate services. And so it only made sense that they would pay a 1% or whatever stipend that they gave off to the church to help people. But back in those days, they didn't have a disease of entitlement that was, you know, ripping through the land where people were demanding, you got to take care of me. They were actually, they take care of themselves. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as you can see, we're really making a point here that the Establishment Clause right there in the First Amendment, in the very first clause, that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a church. Or actually, let me pull up the precise language. And so, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, the only thing that's a part of this, well, let me finish. Georgia went from 1663 to 1798. So technically, Georgia, they were Protestant, by the way. They were the first state to actually surrender. The first state. Oh, no, actually, I take that back. Delaware was the first state. Then it, well, my bad again. Pennsylvania was the first state. As I'm starting to look at this, I've never looked at it this way as the first state. I've always focused on the last state. But Pennsylvania in 1790 was the first state, and they had a non-denominational, Christian non-denominational. They were the ones that gave up their state-sponsored church first. Then it went to Delaware, and then it went to Georgia. And New Jersey went until 1844. And I actually have this in order of when the states actually established the churches, because the first was Virginia, New York. So I went through the order because they went from 1606, 1614, so forth and so on. And so the reason this is important is because Congress was restricted from being able to establish a religion. In other words, they weren't to have any dealings with one faith or compassionate services. Do you understand what I just said? Compassionate services, meaning healthcare, education, welfare, none of these things. This is why we go through the cod fishery bounties. I'm not going to read them here, but I'm going to tell you that Madison uses shock value when he basically says, you know, if we're going to start doing these bounties and paying, basically subsidizing the fisheries for stuff that they aren't doing or can't get done, then we might as well just admit to ourselves that we're going to seize the control over churches and religion and education and all these things. And everybody goes, oh, yeah, that's how I'll just say how restrictive they were, where government was not to go down that path. And he did this to make a point that by starting to go down this path of applying welfare for businesses and market space, you know, the next thing is we'll end up giving that to the people as well. And that really helped end this concept. Well, it never ended it, but it basically silenced this concept of doing this, you know, as far as being able to go down these paths of providing welfare. Bottom line, this also violates the uniformity clause, because what they were doing by creating a bounty was creating a benefit for a group of states where they were fishing for cod, which was the northeastern states. They don't fish for cod down in Georgia. So how were they going to benefit from this bounty? Anyway, so as we look and we've kind of peeled back this view that the states were already practicing a support of and an establishment religion, well, the 14th Amendment, as I already read to you, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of a citizen of the United States. How is establishing a church, unless they tell you that you have to administer or have laws like they used to say no other church can practice? And see, I think that the high ground, the way to go down this path, is to, instead of actually endorsing and supporting a single church, I think the state needs to actually, you know, allow and filter this money down to the counties and basically guide the counties in stating that you need to, you know, work with the religious organizations and community memberships and so forth, and give, you know, and help contribute to the welfare programs that are being operated by the community as well as the churches. Now, here's the kicker, folks. You can't allow the godless secularists to receive a penny if the members are not kicking in. In other words, they're not to subsidize 100% of the needs. They're not even to subsidize, you know, 50%. What needs to happen is they need to probably look at the state subsidizing a 10% on what the parishioners are contributing. In other words, if the godless secular community in your county wants to create a community service where they're going to actually start taking care of their people, then they basically have to take, you know, the contributions that they're getting for welfare, or the contributions, yeah, that they're getting for their welfare services from their parishioners, to turn around and take care of those in their congregation that need. And the state will subsidize based on the 10% of what they're receiving. In other words, they'll get a stipend, a 1% or 10. I'll tell you what, if you look at 10% into a church that is actually receiving its tithes and sacrifices from its own members, then they're actually getting the money that they need. So what ends up happening is as the states tax less and they spend less on this, they don't need to tax as much. So where does that money go that they don't tax? Oh, that goes back to the people. So here's the question. Do you think the godless secular atheists out there that are living a riotous life, do you think they're going to be paying tithes to their atheist church? No, they're not going to pay tithes. And these atheist churches will fail because they're not about compassion. They're about incompassion. They're about greed. They're about avarice. Take, take, take. And so they will not be able to succeed based on their model. And this really forces things into an open market and into an open philosophy, you know, argument to say, what is best for me? What is best for the people in our county? I'll tell you what, atheism isn't the best. And even Ludwig von Mises, who was an agnostic, he recognized and contributed to, you know, and he basically gave, you know, the credits to Christianity to say, this, they've got it right, because this is a voluntary process where people give of their sustenance and substance and resources to the church to help others instead of the state doing it. And in so doing, as the counties actually go down to, and they actually create this small, you know, if you want to call it a commissioner, or you want to have a liaison officer that goes out and makes sure that the churches are actually, you know, holding people to their standards. In other words, a church, if you actually have the church administer a welfare program, that means that the priest, whoever is in charge of that congregation, will need to go out to the family's house and basically take a health and comfort assessment and go, you know what, you're not necessarily living by the doctrines that we espouse. We notice that you're smoking, drinking, and doing drugs. You want our help, then you need to get off of this. I believe the churches have the ability to provide, you know, we can use the carrot or we can use the stick. There's lots of people that believe that government should be able to, you know, compel people to take drug tests. I think it's up to the church. And I believe that if you're actually going into the home and you're actually working with these people, then you can tell whether they're scamming on you, whether they're, you know, playing you or not. And basically, you have to set criteria. It's just like a performance improvement plan. Somebody's failing to perform. If somebody's failing to, you know, measure up in the community, then you need to basically say, well, we need to start seeing your attendance going up. We need to see your involvement in the community going up. We need to see you becoming a full-fledged supporter of, you know, the doctrines and so forth. If you understand the symbiotic relationship, you know, between the church and the state, in taking this path, not creating a monopoly or a singularity on a theocracy, but actually having an open dialogue and supporting all these Christian faiths. Now, to be clear, it has to be a faith that embraces and supports the Constitution. Their basic principles have to embrace individual liberty and individual sovereignty. So in other words, that's another barrier for the atheists and so forth, because the atheists want to demand that you don't have a freedom of exercising your religion. So in other words, their doctrine, you need to be, we should be able to examine their doctrine and say, how is this copacetic? How is this in harmony with the fundamental mores and principles and values that we espouse critical to a land of liberty? It's not. Sorry. Go back and review your tenets, review your planks, review your platform, review your doctrine, church, community service, or what have you. And just anybody that's out there thinking, what about the Mohammedans? They're not going to be able to receive any assistance either. They can't, because they don't espouse individual liberty. They actually have to be fully on board and, you know, promoting individual liberty. You know, come on in and sell your bacon here. We don't, you know, we don't tell people what and how they have to live. But we do if they want assistance. If they need assistance, then we do. And see, creating the symbiotic link and creating these, I'll just say, thresholds and standards actually helps elevate society. When you just entitle people to have money, and you just give them their stipend like we already are doing with Mohammedans that are doing nothing? Anyway, we'll be right back after this.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I don't know if I'm belaboring the point, but bottom line is, and I'm getting into details that help you understand, that our current paradigm, that government solves everything and that we go to government to do everything, has been the real problem. And so we actually have to go back down this path of taking, you know, ourselves, our family, and everybody else on this little journey back in restoring a limited government and unleashing the potential of the people and their community. If we have faith in ourselves and we have faith in our local government and our local community, we can do this. So the petition is going to be easy. Bottom line is we basically need a petition that's going to call out state and federal governments in overstepping bounds in providing compassionate services. The bottom line, all they're doing is enabling bad behavior and promoting decay. What needs to happen is they need to restore their relationship, that the Establishment Clause is not something that is held against the states, that the states need to create an open relationship with all faith-based and community-based organizations that fully embrace individual liberty, individual sovereignty, and demand full compliance to the U.S. Constitution. Those organizations deserve the assistance in helping, you know, the compassionate services and shutting down the compassionate services, the welfare, food stamps, all of these things, and let these community services, these compassionate services, be done by those who do it best to make sure that the people that need it. You know, there may be a huge surge on all of a sudden people asking and so forth. And as a matter of fact, those people that go to church, to the local congregation, when the pastors start announcing, we're going to be taking over the administration of these types of services. And this is how we're going to do it. Because we don't believe in enabling bad behavior. We don't believe you're entitled to live off of the backs of others. You know, the commandment of slavery went both ways. When God told Adam and Eve that they must live by the sweat of their brow, When we look at slavery, slavery is getting somebody else to support you. Well, guess what? These people that are demanding welfare, they are being supported, and they're making slaves out of those who are actually being, you know, providing. And they have no gratitude. They have no appreciation. They feel entitled that they can take from you. That's an absolutely immoral perspective and paradigm, my friends. So we have to restore the relationship with the states and with churches and the community. And so the way we can do this is basically giving them the ability to operate the welfare programs, the healthcare programs, the education programs, the skills and job type of training programs, food assistance, those types of things, period. And in so doing, we just turned our backs on the enabling society, and we've turned our backs on, you know, this concept that the state provides for everybody. That's not how this government was built, and that's clearly not within the constitutional powers for either the state or for the federal government. And if the states actually have within their constitution the powers to do this, folks, you got work to do in that state. You need to peel these things back. So the next one we're going to cover, we've got about 8 minutes to cover this, and we've talked about this before, and I've gone over this a lot. So hopefully we can breeze through most of this really quickly. We need to redefine what the press is. So what is the press, and who, and what are platforms? First off, we already understand that the First Amendment basically says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the press. But who's the press? Is it these platforms, or is it the reporter? Is it the individual that's bearing testimony to what they saw, or what they've discovered, or what they have researched? The 14th Amendment basically says no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Now, how is a platform, the Chicago Tribune, how is that a U.S. citizen? In other words, the abridging of the rights of the press is not included, as far as platforms go, is not included in the 14th Amendment. Now, the states can't make laws that actually restrict the individual person. So we actually have to get them, and we need the states to start defining that the press is you, the people. That it doesn't require a school degree or anything. Anybody in a court of law and on a paper can bear testimony to what they saw, what they report, or what they've done research on, what have you. We need to redefine the press as the people, that the people have a right to report and bear witness. By so doing, this shuts down social media's ability to censor anything other than for decency laws or what have you. Because if they allow pornography like Twitter, they need to be, and we need to clean up the internet, folks. Instead of having .coms for pornography, we need to have a .xxx. That way, anything that is of that type of material requires evidence, pure evidence, that a person is of that age, that a child cannot get access to that. And so this goes down to, you know, getting a computer and having an adult actually signing, because bottom line, when we have an adult signing, because now we have this system that you're bringing into your home, you're going to have a phone, a smartphone, or what have you. And if you hand that to a child and you do not install these very specific parental guidelines that keep the child from being able to receive pornographic material, erotic material, then you will go to jail. As the parent, the guardian, the educator, it doesn't matter. You give them a phone and they do not, and a policeman looks at the phone and notices that the guard is not established on that smartphone to where it does not allow this child to see pornographic material, then it's a done deal, my friends. And by having that .xx and going after any platform, any web design or anything else that is in the .com, .org, .anything other than .xxx that is erotic in nature, See, this is how we do it, folks. We just actually say that's where you go, and that's where you'll hide in that corner. You'll hide behind the dot XXX, and this is how we shut them down. Any, you know, this tornadoes, because who didn't get affected by that? I actually got hit by the tornado. My wife and I, when the Wild Wild West, she actually got hit by more than I did. And I had to go and save her because her computer got locked because, you know, she went to a .com website, didn't know it was, you know, a porn site because there was nothing in the language in the search or anything else that said this. This is how bad it was in the late 90s and early 2000s that the, you know, the internet web surfing and all of that was, you know, really, really wide open. It was the Wild Wild West. So anywho, anything like that happens, that .com and everybody else, they should actually be seized and sent to jail. And we have the ability of doing that. And anything that's coming from outside the United States, folks, I've already told you this. Anything that is coming out from outside the United States domain addresses can be shut down and blocked. We do not have, and other countries have a privilege of being able to communicate within our standards. If they don't want to comply to our standards and they want to allow pornography and or, you know, cyber warfare and those types of things, we just block them. They're nothing coming from their domain spaces, their IP spaces, will come through our firewalls. We can shut off the entire world. We can isolate ourselves. That's okay, folks. We are not obligated to force and to have these firewalls open. Now, for government, now government can actually have very specific tunnels that will allow ambassador channels and those types of things and government-to-government type of connections. Folks, they're creating problems that want you to get you so fed up to say, let's surrender our sovereignty. No. Building walls serves purposes. And the way we judge our society is which way those guns are pointing on the walls. If they're pointing outward in protecting us on the inside, then we have a secure liberal nation that is securing our freedoms and liberties. But if those guns are pointed inward and allowing the outward world to attack us, then our government is no longer serving us. Our government is actually committing a rebellion against us. And Reagan, I think, basically stated that during his administration in the 80s, when he basically says, look at those walls and which way the guns are pointing. He may have said it, somebody else may have said it. And if I got it wrong, then by all means, help me out here. But bottom line, we need to go back to the press being the people, and that the platforms are actually these media centers, whether that be ABC, CBS, it doesn't matter. They're platforms. And so we need to start defining video, audio, print, what have you. It doesn't matter. We need to start defining that they have standards, that they must be objective, that if they are going to only promulgate information regarding one slant or one particular view, then they are a propaganda mill and we go after them. Now, we ran out of time, so we're going to pick this up. We'll pick this up in our next episode. Tomorrow's Feedback Friday, so we'll probably pick this up tomorrow because we want to get through most all this stuff, and we're getting really close, folks. We're getting really close to the end, but we still got a long way to go. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process.
This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.